Hey, let's begin. It's
This meeting
morning.
is being recorded.
All right, it's today, Monday, November 23rd, 2020, and I want to say hello to all those listening, both in person and both Zoom. I just heard Rav Ezraki, the Rosh Yeshiva from Beit Pagan, is teaching on Zoom, and I heard him say Zoom gam ken tova, Zoom gam ken tova, Zoom gam ken tova. What did he say? Zoom what? And he almost says I'm not quoting him correctly, but that's the general gist of what he was saying till Yom was able to speak. Zoom
gam zoom
letova. Gam zoom letova. Gam, we say gam zoom letova, gam zoom letova. Yesterday Shir, I can't believe all the comments. I can't even put, we just printed it all out, but I'll see what was sent, and the whole question of the Lulav and Etrog and Yerushalayim, and Jack feels we should be Mechadesh Yameinu L'Kekedem, just as we wear Tchelet Tzitzit, we should walk around all day with the Lulav and Etrog like the Yakira Yerushalayim of old. And but I want to tell Jack, he has a basic misunderstanding. I just want to explain it, that a sukkah, you make a bracha whenever you eat, and according to the Gaon, whenever you need a sukkah. Obviously, according to the Gaon, it doesn't mean you make a bracha every hour. It means when you walk out and you're mafsik, then when you come back, you make a bracha again, even if you're only learning in the sukkah. But that's because sukkah is a kiyum 24/7. In other words, every time you're in a sukkah, you're makayim the mitzvah of lashev basukkah tachat ananei hakavod. Lulav and etrog, it's a kiyum once a day. Once you're yotze, you're yotze. When you're carrying it around the rest of the day, it's not. It's a hiddur of, I don't even use the word hiddur mitzvah, but it's a hiddur of the beauty of a lulav and etrog and the chag. But the kiyum is once a day. And lachatchila, that's what we said yesterday, the kiyum has to be with binyan nuim during hallel. But I love what I was told about my Talmud, the Eish Kodesh Rebbe of Moshe Weinberger, that he built a little sukkah adjacent to where he davens in the shul, and before Hallel he walks out into the sukkah, makes a bracha, and he's yotzei lefi kol hadeah, lefi the Kabbalah as well. But that's exactly the kiyum, the ultimate kiyum. But for many of us, myself included, I wake up long before I'm davening, and I want to be mekayim the mitzvah as early as possible. Zizim makdimim the mitzvah. That's what we spoke about yesterday. Jack, I just want to add one more word. With non-Jews in the sukkah, you talk about Kabbalah. See, there's a different problem. On Yontif, you basically can't invite Jews to your meal, Shem Yarbeh, because if you're inviting non-Jews, you may cook more than necessary to have food for them. Unlike Shabbos, when there's no problem, because you can't cook on Shabbos. And this may be part of the reason that they don't want non-Jews in the sukkah, because once they're in the sukkah, you're going to invite them to the Suda. I can only tell you, this is a big shiloh. We spoke about it over the decades. What about Chief Rabbi Gorin? He's making a Pesach, the Sudan Pesach, a Seder, and the ambassador from the United States wants to come to Rabbi Gorin's Seder. And Kachaya, and the ambassador came, other members of the consular staff from the United States. And how's Rabbi Gordon allowed to invite them? All right, a lot has been written on it. Halacha l'maisa, if you have a caterer who caters and everything's ordered before, could be we can find a kula under pressing circumstances, because after all, it is the ambassador of the United States. But it's more important, not the solution, but to know that this is the shaila. And it could be that that's why you uncovered that viewpoint, that you were told in the Shtiblach by the good rabbi that you can't have goyim in a sukkah. All right, it has to be checked, but that's what it would seem to me. about what we spoke about Turo and all the solutions people are coming up with for yeshiva boys, Hasidishu Yungalite, to get degrees. I'm talking about America and Israel. The Haredi world is fighting this, and if you're aware of their press and what they write, they call this American Haredim, as if to put them down. They're not the equal of Israeli Haredim, but they want to go to high school, they want to do Bakrut, all right. So I got an interesting email from someone whose email address is Irish Brisk. Irish Brisk. He must be from Ireland originally, and he learned in Brisk. Otherwise, what does it mean? So he writes about something I've seen, advertisements from Fairleigh Dickinson University, New Jersey. And they have a whole deal with yeshiva and seminary graduates. They give you credit, then you're able to get a bachelor's essentially through the computer and get it quicker, sooner. And I see they advertise in the local Anglo-Jewish papers in the New York area, where you have, for instance, the Flatbush paper, the Five Towns Jewish News, etc. I can only tell you the following story, which is a true story. It has to be within the last 15, 20 years or so. I was much younger, and I spoke in public. Now people who want to hear me come to the Kollel. Now you can't come to the Kollel, so get the link to the Sheurim. I put all my energy into the Sunday, Monday classes. But years ago, I spoke at the OU. And in the audience was a young man who was learning in Mir. And he heard me speak, and he made up his mind he's going to study me, he's going to become my Talmud. So we checked out where I teach, what, and he himself comes from a very distinguished Lakewood family. His father was a Talmud Mufak of Rav Shneur Cutler, younger than I am, but nevertheless, I knew Rav Shneur very well, and he was a Talmud Mufak, a very fine rabbi, and a large amount of children, and everyone in the greater Lakewood orbit, I should say. And this young man wants to come to Gris to be my Talmud. So he contacts YU, and they tell him you have to have a college degree. So within 1 year, he comes out with a college degree. How he did it, I have no idea, but with the computer and credits for what he did in high school and learning in Mir. And the YU was anxious to take him in because they recognized the name right away. It's a well-known greater Lakewood family. So he became my Talmud, and Ein HaChinami was one of the greatest Talmudim I had in the last 15, 20 years. I could relate to him many ways over because we both related to YU, we related to Lakewood, and we both knew Yiddish. So there was really a total interaction, interconnection. But I always marveled how he came up with that bachelor's within 1 year. By the way, when he finished Smicha, he went back to Mir and continued to learn after Smicha, and then he went into the big world. I should be in touch with him again to find out how he's doing. I also want to mention, we spoke about the Washington Hotel, where the Agudat Rabbanim had their convention, and believe it or not, a Talmud came up, what you can find on the computer. This is the story, 2003, when the Washington Hotel closed down. It was located in Bel Hava, that's in the greater Far Rockaway area, and it was a strictly kosher hotel. The owners rejoiced in the fact that it was Le'ela, Le'ela, and Kashrit under the OU. And Ein HaChinami, I was absolutely right that Nachum Lam, if you made the connection to your father, the link, it's a long way from the Bronx. And believe me, that little kid Ani Rothkopf, the chutzpahdik, but he was very correct when he said to Noach Bunchstein, Vietman geschlafen nachts, how did you sleep during the night? And I also want to mention, and I thank Rabbi Rubin, what I'm holding in my hands is a printout also, I would imagine from the computer, of the Maimonides newsletter, Kol Rambam, and this is from 2014. And it talks about, remember I mentioned last week that I was upset, the news is not good. Billy Millen died of corona, was the Makkabah Patish. And Billy Millen, he claimed he was the very first student to enroll in Maimonides in 1937. So that was, to close, I would say, of an era. Okay, at time allowing, much later after class, I'll come back to Billy Millen and have an interesting picture. All right, but let's get down to work today. Very fascinating material, but this is the heart of the issue. It's all over the place. If you saw today's Jerusalem Post, Monday, today, there's a whole op-ed piece and there's a whole article about Rabbi Riskin or by Rabbi Riskin. And boy, is this issue in the headlines in the state of Israel. But what we saw last week, the Iser of the Rabbanim, 11 Gedolei Yisrael, Gedolei Rosh Yeshiva, and very fascinating, who didn't sign, Mori Rebbe the Rav, Rav Reuven Grzovsky, and Rav Lezer Silva. And then, to a certain degree, it's three who equal one, because both Rav Reuven Grzovsky and Rav Lezer Silva, they did not want to offend the Rav. They knew the Rav intimately. Rav Lezer knew the Rav intimately. Rav Reuven Grzovsky evidently knew him at least intimately. And they knew his gadlut and learning and his tzidkut, you know. The Rav was not, everyone thinks he was a gaon. He was a gaon, absolutely. But he was a tzaddik yesod olam, his own practice of Torah Hashem was on a level, again, when you talk about a stopwatch, we need people in the generation, but it's not for we normal, simple Jews. And all three, basically, it's a Beit Din formed around the Rav, not to sign the Issa. Now, and that Issa opens a very interesting question that someone in the Kola last week, I don't recall who it might have been, Binyamin, it might have been you, I don't recall. Where is Binyamin, by the way? I didn't see him yesterday. He's in quarantine. All right, that's a fifth of my class is in quarantine. Okay. Ellie is out already. Okay, Mikavelitov. So a very interesting question was raised, and I told you I would come to it. You don't. You raised the question. You didn't realize what you were touching upon. What is this psak that they gave, or the cherem as it's popularly called? Is it a psak halacha, or is it das tera? And here, I'll give you the source. You won't believe that this is actually, there's material on this. It raises the whole issue of das tera. Without going into many details, as you recall, I spent half a year on the topic of das tera. But what are we talking about? Throughout the millennium, we knew the concept of a psak halacha. Psak halacha, does it obligate you? Well, I would say, asay lecha rav, if your Rebbe gave a psak halacha, it certainly obligates you. I cannot say it's total obligation, because all of you who heard my shirm on the Kuntis HaShach in the Reish Mem Bet in Yoredeya, where we spent more than 2 years on the Kuntis, all of you understand that in halacha there can be a machloket. But if you have a Rebbe, out of respect to your Rebbe, if he paskins what he paskins, you have to be loyal to your Rebbe. Certainly if the halacha reaches the stage of crystallization, again, going back to my shiurim on the Rambam, Hakdam LeMishneh Torah, the Rambam raises the famous question, why do the maskanot of the Gemara, why do they obligate every last Jew, ba'asher husham Moshe? Every Jew is obligated. And it's not like a machlekes when to make a bracha over the lulav and etrog. And the Rambam says, because in relation to the maskanot of the Gemara, hiskimu aleihem kol Yisrael. Hiskim aleim kol Yisrael, crystallization in Bivrit Madanit, hitgapshut would be the word that that you probably should use. So there's no question, when you say something is a psak, to a certain degree it obligates, it demands, it commands respect. The Jews, not the, if it's machlokes Rav Henkin and Rav Moshe over civil marriage, so you can say, I follow Rav Henkin, I follow Rav Moshe. But once there's a hitgapshut, once there's a crystallization, we don't have this luxury. So there's no question a halacha is certainly commands respect. When you come to Das Teira, what is Das Teira? I'm using a popular word. I'm using a word that didn't exist until the 20th century. No one, the word Das Teira is in the Gemara, it's in Chulin Daf Tzadi Aleph. It means the question of which vein, when we say Git Hanasha, is it the left, the right side, both sides? So Das Teira, the tradition is the right side, fine. That's how it's used in the sense of, I would say, a tradition, a Kabbalah, a Mesorah, but not in the contemporary sense. In the 20th century, we find in the Hasidic world, and then afterwards in the Agudat Yisrael world, and afterwards in the Litvisha world, the word Das Teira, and I can only quote to you the Hesped for Rabbi Chaim Isaac Rezhinsky, the most extreme words ever said about how powerful Das Teira is. Those words were said by Mori Rebbe, the Rav, in his Hesped for Rabbi Chaim Isaac in the Aguda Convention in America in 1941. And he describes that every question that comes up, you can have questions that are pure halacha, questions that are hashkafa, but whatever the Rabbanim say obligates us. Rav Chaim Moshe was the final word, not just on the tzitz, which represents halacha, Devar Hashem, but on the Choshen Mishpat, that represents the 12 tribes, ethical questions, moral questions, economic questions, political questions, social questions, military questions, etc., etc. Right, that's a very extreme statement. Nevertheless, you have to admit that even assuming that this concept of Das Teira is part of Yiddishkeit, it can't be as binding as a psak. A psak is mamish a psak halacha. The Das Teira, all right, it's guidance, it's advice, but it's not as binding. So I need not tell you that the Das Teira, I'll be very brief, what I'm touching upon is, you can fill a room with what's been written on these topics. Das Teira exploded on the American scene in the mid-70s. How did it explode on the American scene? Moshe, do you know what happened? How did it suddenly explode in the 1970s? Jimmy Carter didn't throw it out as a bomb, but it exploded. Jewish Observer. Jewish Observer had an article by one of the most prominent Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, the Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin, and the article on the front page, Das Teira, Rav Kuttner speaking about the Holocaust. And what the article was, it was a talk he gave at Torah Mesorah, a talk he gave to the leaders of the day school movement, and it dealt with how to teach about the Holocaust, how to teach about the Shoah. And Rav Kuttner in this article, I don't want to summarize the whole article, but the heart of the article, he blames the Holocaust on the Zionist movement. And he talks about how before the Zionist movement, the Jews and the Arabs got along in Israel and the Mufti, and then when the Zionist movement came along, we created this antagonism, and the Mufti went and he helped Hitler, etc., etc. And, well, I need not tell you, the world exploded over this article. And it's interesting that the person who became the most well-known as the opponent in Rabbi Kuttner was a YU Musmach, Larry Kaplan. Larry Kaplan went on to get a PhD in Jewish philosophy. He's, I don't know if he's still active, actively teaching. He's not my age, but he's, you know, within the ballpark of my age. He taught at Montreal at the university, McGill University, and he is very well known because he translated the Rav's Ish Halacha into English. But I want to add one very important line. Many people have translated the Rav. Not always was the Rav happy with the translation. Larry Kaplan's translation of Ish Halacha, the Rav worked with him, and the Rav was extremely pleased with that translation. So that's Larry Kaplan, and he wrote a tremendous response to Rav Huttner that appeared in Tradition. Once this issue floated and went back and forth, and you have to understand it was very provocative, I can tell you, Eidut Nemana, that these eyes and these ears, so what I'm telling you is what I saw. All of you know that there's a very famous street in Yerushalayim named Rehov Rav Chaim Berlin. And Rehov Rav Chaim Berlin, there's a very famous building, 18 Rehov Rav Chaim Berlin. What made this building so famous? Great Rabbanim have lived there over the last 51, 52 years. I'm among the initial settlers in the building. Half the building were Rabbanim, and not just some Rabbanim. We're talking of from America, Rabbi from Canada, Rabbi Lewittis, Rabbi Drazen, and Rabbi Yoshua Huttner. Later, Rabbi Yugristnus, the London Avbeitin, lives there. Wow, and even the people who are not Rabbanim, who are professors, but the Talmidei Chachamim, Sam Dershowitz, Mordechai Rottenberg, etc., the president of the Bank of Israel, Moshe Mandelbaum, also not a lightweight, a Hebron Yeshiva boy. So Rabbi Yoshua Huttner, I was very close to. He lived directly underneath me. I lived on the fourth floor. He lived on the third floor. And when his cousin's article came out, I was in his. I was in his house at least twice a week, three times a week, very close. And he took the magazine, threw it on the floor, stomped on it, and spit at it. Ad kedei kach. And that's his first cousin, Rav Yoshua Huttner, and Rav Yitzchak Huttner were the grand. They were the same grandchildren of the same grandfather, the Rav of Anshishuk. So. It was an article that created a storm. People constantly spoke about it. And finally, under Rabbi Lamb, when the yeshiva was already no longer facing bankruptcy, and Rabbi Lamb had time to think and do and inaugurate, he inaugurated the Orthodox Forum. I don't know if how many of you recall already what that was. Every year they would take a certain topic and they would invite to Yeshiva University, experts on the topic, and they would present papers, and later it would be published, and quite a number of very important volumes resulted from the Orthodox Forum. Today, I don't know if you have that anymore. Now, you wouldn't. Today, everything could be done by the computer. You don't have to all come to New York. You can have people all over the world. Today, it's a different world. But this was the 80s into the 90s, maybe into the early 2000s. The most important volume to come out of that forum is the volume I'm about to quote from, Rabbinic Authority and Personal Autonomy. Autonomy, personal autonomy. And you can see from the title, Rabbinic Authority, Das Teira, and personal autonomy, where do you as a human being have the right to make decisions? And once again, by that time, Larry Kaplan was well known in this field. His article is the first article, the most important article. By the way, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs has an article here, and I'm quoting from Larry Kaplan's article beginning on page 18. He gets involved with this Chayrim, with this Isa. Is it a halachic psak, or is it das Teira. And he's implying that if it's halachic psak, it's much more serious and much more authoritative. A Gulebin great Rashi Yeshiva, Rishun halachic psak. If it's das Torah, so perhaps you can disagree, it's still within the realm of personal autonomy. And it's very fascinating, because he cites on page 19, he interviews Rabbi Moses David Tendler, Rabbi Moshe David Tendler. Rabbi Moshe David Tendler, you all know who that is. He should live and be well. He's still active. He's well into his 90s today, I would imagine. I remember, you know, when I was a kid coming into the yeshiva, he already was a Shem Dabba. And all right, on one hand, as I'm quoting Larry Kaplan now, he was both the son-in-law of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein and a noted rabbinic scholar in his own right. And he evidently discussed with Rabbi Moshe David Tendler, is this prohibition on synagogue council, is it a din Torah or is it just das Teira Hashkafa? And he quotes that Rabbi Moshe David told him that his father-in-law, Rabbi Moshe, insisted that it always was a strict psak halacha. And that would mean very binding, very authoritative. And this is discussed back and forth. You see, Larry Kaplan takes the attitude, if it would be a strict halacha, why don't we have a tshuva? Why don't we have sources? And he quotes Rabbi Tendler, who says this was a strict halacha. On the other hand, he quotes Rabbi Tendler that in private, Reb Moshe would be angry when he would hear all these people talking das Teira, and he's quoting his father-in-law here. Why are people talking about das Teira? Reb Moshe was one to exclaim when they don't even know a shach or a taz. And you can look it up, the volume, and it's Larry Kaplan deals with it. What's interesting is that when Reb Moshe spoke in public, he spoke about Das Teira 100%. I'm quoting to you from, once again, the Jewish Observer, December 1977. And this article was based upon a talk that Reb Moshe gave at the Aguda Convention. And I'm quoting Reb Moshe Feinstein now, the Torah leadership of every generation always possesses the ability to perceive the needs of the time and to initiate individual acts or even sweeping ordinances to meet these needs. And these ordinances bear the full weight of an actual halakha. And do you understand the implications here? That according to Reb Moshe, psak halacha and das Teira blend into one. If you are a believing Jew and you see the Gedolei Yisrael, the Chachamim, Emunat Chachamim, leading us into the modern concept of das Teira, then we have to follow them in all matters. Following the lead of the Torah, following the lead of the Torah leadership in all matters, even those not directly governed by the rulings of the Shulchan Aruch, has always been a fundamental principle of Agudat Yisrael. Those who maintained, what do the Talmidei Chachamim know about politics? This is a field where we are better versed. Groups that set their policies in such a manner cannot be considered as being within the Torah camp. And that's pretty strong, pretty sharp. And Reb Moshe goes on. And here you see that Reb Moshe Feinstein, who by all means by the 1970s, Reb Aaron Kotler was gone already. He died in 1962. But Reb Moshe, who was the leading rabbinic figure in the Torah world, at least in the right-wing Torah world, in the YU, of course, the Rav, but here you see Reb Moshe speaking so strongly. And synagogue council, this is a psak halacha, this is das Torah, they're both equally important. And you can see how, despite the fact there were three people who abstained, but in the overall Torah world, the 11 Rosh Yeshiva, led by Reb Moshe, acquiescence of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, it carried the day. It became very powerful. And ultimately, as you know, by 1994, Synagogue Council comes to an end, and we'll talk about that, but not yet. Now, what was the Rav's position? And here, this echo of the Rav, as I say, goes on and on until today, even in today's Jerusalem Post. Now, when we come to the Rav's position, let me give you a drop of background. I've said this before, let me say it very quickly. The Rav in the 40s was very hesitant to take public stands. He had a lot of heartache in the 30s into the 40s with Boston, with Kashrut, with state investigation. He was singed. He was burned. But by the 50s, he already had established himself. He was in Yeshiva University more than 10 years already, beginning in May 1941. He had many Talmidim who occupied top rabbinates in America. RCA had become a force, and he became the force in RCA. And this issue of Synagogue Council, New York Board of Rabbis, he couldn't avert it, avoid it. There was no way he could deny it. And the Tug Morgan Journal got to him. And here you have to understand, when I was growing up in New York, there were about four daily Jewish newspapers. By the 50s, if I recall, they were down to two, the Tug and the Morgan Journal combined, and you had the Forwards. Forwards was more socialist, anti-religious, it was public. Could you imagine, they published on Shabbos, the printing presses ran, lo aleinu. The Tug Morgan Journal already, the Morgan Journal was always much more pro-religion and pro-Zionism. The Tug was more a secular Zionist, but with time it moved right and combined with the Morgan Journal. And the Tug Morgan Journal interviewed the Rav. You have no idea the impact this made. That's all we were talking about, and every word the Rav said, we were breaking our eyes, our minds to read the Yiddish, because I'm like my grandchildren. My grandchildren all speak English, but some read English fluently and some don't. I speak Yiddish, but I don't read it fluently. It takes me time. I have to go slowly, and generally, so whenever I can get a Hebrew translation or an English translation, I'll read that rather than the Yiddish. And we to read what the Rav had to say. Now, in modern times, we owe a chesed to the Torah Harav Foundation. When the Rav died, he left a tremendous amount of material. There were entire file cabinets filled with his drushot, with his talks, his public talks, his manuscripts. The Rav could not talk extraneously. He could not get up and talk without notes. There were many theories given. One theory was he used to stutter. Many geniuses stutter. He's left-handed. I don't know. There's been research on this that it combines being left-handed with being a stutterer and being a genius. I don't know. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but there may be something to it. But when he had a manuscript, he didn't stutter. Another theory is that since English wasn't his native language, he wrote in English and wrote it out so he could speak fluently, didn't have to stumble for a word. I don't know how true that is, that's another theory. What's interesting is that his drashot, his teaching, the classroom, he wrote it out in Hebrew, but he delivered it in English. And now, Torah Tarav, when the Rav died, I can tell you his will read as follows. This will was worked out with Julie Berman, who we all owe a great debt of thanks to. Julie, I don't have to elaborate, from the Berman family. His nephew today is the president of Yeshiva University, the Rosh Yeshiva, my student, Ari Berman, excuse me.
His grandson's in the
Kollel. His grandson is in the Kollel now, very nice. Too bad he's not here to hear nice words about his family. Please convey it to him. So Julie was the Rav's lawyer. Julie was a classmate of Baron Lichtenstein. I trust you know that. And the will read that his spiritual heritage, two out of the three children, the majority vote can decide what to do with it. And with all these manuscripts, his two daughters took charge of that. Reb Chaim, my classmate, took charge of the Lumdisha manuscripts, but the Hashkofa manuscripts, philosophic manuscripts, call it what you wish, that the daughters took charge of. And the Torah Tarav Foundation was organized, and they have published a great deal. A great deal of it comes out of Har Etzion, out of the yeshiva, Rabbi Lichtenstein, his Talmidim. Some very capable people have worked on this. The most important volume, simply because of what it contains, is the collection of the Rav's letters and communications. Selected. It's not like Chabad. Chabad put out endless letters of the Rebbe. Some are more important, some are less important. Here, I submitted letters. None of my letters were printed because they told me they're not taking any letters. No, there's a reason why. Letters that deal with a personal issue. Right? I have a letter there with what to do about a gay root, and the Rebbe don't get. It's a very important letter because the Rebbe writes to me, don't get involved in machloikis. Reb Heschel quotes the letter in one of his volumes. But the letters they published are all of a general nature, dealing with the communal problems. And they did a beautiful job, and it's my student who edited it. The title of the volume is Community, Covenant, and Commitment. Selected Letters and Communications, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, edited by Nathaniel Helfgott, Natty Helfgott. Natty Helfgott is with Chovevei Torah. He's one of their leading educators today. He's also married to a student of mine. His wife was my student in Machon Gold, if I recall correctly. And this volume was published in 2005. Now, the Yiddish letters dealing with these problems were translated into English. There's an English translation, later a Hebrew translation came out. In other words, this very volume is available in Hebrew as well. In my office I have both, the English and the Hebrew. How do I consult it? When it was originally in English, I consult the English. Originally in Hebrew, I consult the Hebrew. Yiddish translated, I'll consult the English. And beginning on page 143, in this 1954 column, the second of a 10-part series in the Yiddish daily Tag Magen Journal, the Rav delineated parameters for interaction between Orthodox and non-Orthodox rabbis. These parameters became the guiding principle for modern Orthodox lay and rabbinic institutions in the following decades. And this translation, interestingly enough, they took from the book I quoted, I believe, last week, A Fire in His Soul, the book about Erwin Bunim. In the appendix, you'll find this article translated from Yiddish into English. And Natty Helfgott made a few minor changes. It's similar to what I did with Larry Kaplan's translation of Ish Halacha, I asked his permission, whatever I cite in my work on the Rav, I enhanced the English slightly. What does it mean I enhanced the English? Because I told you, the Rav wrote English like German. German, you have run-on sentences. In English, you don't have a sentence 50 words long. So Larry Kaplan, in translating, at times, just subconsciously followed the Rav's way of writing. And I'm already a klishlishi. So when I got it, I asked Larry's permission. I thank him in the introduction to the Rav. He gave me permission if I want to edit his translation, which at times, it's not that I edited it, but I broke it down. It should sound better English, not Germanic. Anyway, here's the question. They asked the Rav, I'll summarize it. What is your position on integrated organizations, cooperation between Orthodox and non-Orthodox congregations, cooperation between Orthodox ordained rabbis and non-Orthodox ordained rabbis? This was the first question, which essentially is, what is your attitude towards synagogue council? What is your attitude towards the board of rabbis? Then they ask a second question. We would also like to know why Orthodoxy fights the conservative movement, if after all, conservative Judaism claims to recognize the authority of the halacha. And of course, what they're asking here is, and you have to understand, nowadays we'll say, who is Orthodox? All right, someone's going to do an article. So whether they like it or not, if they're going to be scholarly accurate and intellectually honest, they have to write who is Orthodox. So they have to write about Satmar, they have to write about Lubavitch, they have to write Agudah, they have to write Mizrahi, they have to write about Lakewood, they have to write about YU, they have to write Mech Hazarab, they have to write Mir. So now, take the question slightly further. If conservative Judaism claims that they follow halacha, why are you so opposed? There are different opinions on halacha. No one will claim that YU is Lakewood. No one will claim Agudah is Mizrahi. No one will claim Mech Hazarab is Mir Yeshiva or Panovich or Chevron. So it's a good question. And you have to understand this in the context of the 50s. Right now, Eli Weinstein is looking at me, what kind of question is that? The conservatives, halacha, come on. But we're talking the 1950s. So these were the questions that the Rav is asked. And you'll see how he answers. This is the Rav speaking. If I can speak Mamaloshen, Eret Nisht Prost. Yitzchak, how would you explain that? Eret Nisht Prost. The Rav, when he spoke, the Rav taught us, an Orthodox rabbi doesn't open his mouth without quoting something. You just don't talk like a chveis, cheap, prust, vulgar. It has a bad connotation. But that's in Yiddish, eret nisht prust. You know, when you'll say, go hear this speaker, he always has something to say. Then you'll say, another speaker, he tells good jokes. You follow? So, all right, there's a big difference. So you'll see the way the Rav handles it. And this is the Rav now, word by word. First, unity in Israel is a basic principle. We have formulated this principle in one sentence. I'll say it in Hebrew. Ata echad v'shimcha echad umi ka'amcha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. And that, of course, is Shabbos, the Shmon Esrei, Mincha. So unity is very important. Now, fine that the Jews should be unified, all of us agree. But what does unity mean? And here the Rav divides up. The principle of unity expresses itself in two ways. First, the unity of Jews as members of a spiritual community, as a congregation. that was established through the conclusion of the covenant at Mount Sinai, Vatem Tiyuli Mamlechet Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh. The unity of the Jewish people as a community is based upon the uniqueness of the Jewish way of life as practiced by us, a Torah existence. And this is the rub, this is the heart of Yiddishkeit. Mamlechet Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh. This involves, I always say, you want to be a Jew, it begins with Naseh V'Nishma. We answered HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No other nation was willing to answer him. Naseh V'Nishma. And here's the rub so beautifully. What ties the Yemenite water carrier in the streets of Tel Aviv to the Jews of Boston? A uniform Orach Chaim, the Shema Yisrael, Shabbat, Kol Nidrei Night, the Seder Night, Kashrut, Tfilin, the characteristic trait of kindness, the hope and yearning for redemption. The Hebrew word Eidah, congregation, as the same word as aid, witness, and Eidut, testimony. Thus, a spiritual religious entity is tied through a transcendental ethical consciousness to a vast memory of a people about a divine law with regard to a common past and a collective future. In brief, a collective testimony unites us, all of us, into a Jewish community. It therefore goes without saying that the Jew who erases from his memory this great testimony and destroys the unique collective tradition breaks the tie which joins him with the Jewish community as part of a congregation, as part of a spiritual Torah entity. And this is the Rav, Kedako B'Kodesh. Magnificent thought, magnificent words. To put it on a very simple basis, there are two levels to Jewish unity. On this level, that we are Eidah, Adat Yisrael, the main word is aid, testimony. Testimony to the divine existence, the divine charge, the divine command. What unites Jews? And when the Rav asks what unites the water carrier, the Yemenite water carrier in Jerusalem, by the way, that's what he saw in 1935. The Rav's concepts, this I can tell you from private conversation with the Rav and his family, he could never comprehend the great technological, economic, social advances in Israel, because his mindset was the 35 he visited. Itaka saw Yemenite water carriers. What combines them to the Harvard student davening in Maimonides? And it's Torah. And here I'll tell you a story to illustrate this. Very, very powerful story and a very true story. Some of you heard my lectures, or many of you heard my lectures last year, I believe it was, when we were dealing with the start of RCA, and we spoke about the historic visit to Russia, that's Khrushchev, right after Stalin died, I believe it was 54, you have the rabbinic delegation from RCA visiting Russia. I have a picture I added to my files of the five rabbis. I spoke about it all last year. And they were all clean shaven. And here you're coming to Russia, you're coming to anyone who remembers a rabbi, a Jew, his concepts of what Jews look like, Hasidim, beards, payas. And here, these are rabbis. All right. when they visited the heart of Russia, Moscow, Leningrad, these people were more sophisticated. They already, these are major cities, so they already knew this is what a modern Orthodox rabbi looks like, or an Orthodox rabbi in modern times, at that moment, I'm talking in the 50s, not today when everyone outside the Rebbe in this room has a beard. But that's what a rabbi looked like. When they reached Georgia, Bukhara, the Chachamim looked at these rabbis, it was hard for them to conceive these are rabbis. And Rabbi David Hollander took out his tzitzit. The minute they saw that the Rabbanim are wearing tzitzit, like they wear tzitzit, all barriers dissipated. And this is what the Rebbe is saying. What combines us? What combines us? Tzitzit, tefillin, davening, Seder night, Yom Kippur, Shabbos, Yontif, all that goes with it. This is Eidah. This is aid. This is testimony. So now I want to ask you, on this level, do we have anything in common with the Reform movement? Do we have anything in common with the conservative movement of today? Total negation, total abrogation, total cancellation of the Vahashem, Zu Halacha. What are we talking about? What are we talking about? Just think for a moment. What do we have in common? What can we discuss? Reform movement? The classic reform? There are no mitzvot, no commandments, no Israel, no belief in Messiah, no belief in Jerusalem, no belief in Kabbanot. The conservative movement? All right, we'll see what the Rav has to say. But now in the year 2021, what do we have in common? Homosexuality, lesbianism, everything is accepted. Mikvah, who needs mikvah? Who needs tarat mishpacha? We have showers in our house, right or wrong? Kashrut, you're traveling. Eat. What's the difference? Fish, salads. What's the, all right, so the plates we used for chaza an hour earlier. But right now, we're eating fish, we're eating salad. I mean, what do we have in common? It doesn't even begin. Mixed seating. Who ever heard of mixed seating? Os Yoshi and Moshe, and only afterwards Miriam and the Beit HaMikdash and the Makam HaKodesh. You want mixed seating where the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Nun Bet, what are we talking about? Tikkun Gadol, where the whole separation begins formally in a house of worship? What do we have in common? All right? So you see, on this level, Aaron Rakefed is no different than the 11 Rashi Yeshiva who signed the Cherem against Synagogue Council and New York Board of Rabbis. Not only am I no different, any Torah Jew can't be different. On this level of aid, Eidah, Naseh v'Nishma, Goy Kadosh, Mamlechet Kohanim, what do we have in common? Okay. So this is one level of unity. Secondly, now quoting the Rav again on page 144. Secondly, unity manifests itself also in our unique political historical lot as a nation. We are unique not only in our way of life, but also in our historical transmigrations and in our paradoxical fate. Our history would not fit into a different historical framework, and our fate is incomprehensible. The enigma of our existence is primarily revealed through our loneliness and our afflictions in all times, the current era included. Hain am levadad yishkon uvagoyim lo yitchashev. And of course, what the Rebbe is referring to here, as a nation, what we have suffered, what we have gone through. Look at our history. Look at the Crusades. Look at the Khmelnytsky massacres. Look at the rampant anti-Semitism in the 1800s into the 1900s, culminating with the Holocaust, with Hitler. What we have seen, what we have suffered, killing man, woman, and child. The state of Israel did not ignore this unique fate, but quite the contrary. It has given expression to it in a more concrete fashion. No Jew can renounce as part of this, of the unity, which is based upon a feint of loneliness of the Jewish people as a nation. Religious Jews, irreligious Jews, Mapai, Mizrahi, or Aguda, all are included in one nation, which stands lonesome and in misery in a large and often antagonistic world. The political, historical unity as a nation is based upon the conclusion of the covenant in Egypt, which occurred even prior to the giving of the Torah at Sinai. V'lakachti etchem li la'am, v'hayiti lachem l'elokim. And this covenant forced upon all of us one uniform historical fate. The Hebrew word am, nation, is identical to the Hebrew word im, with. Our faith of unity manifests itself through a historical, indispensable union. And you see what the Rebbe is saying here? Before we spoke about Eidah Eid, now it's am in. When the Jewish nation, what we have gone through, what we have suffered, we have been exiled. Every country, anti-Semitism, ultimately Hitler. And here you can't differentiate between Jew to Jew. On this level, all of us are caught up in this political, sociological reality. And we are part of Am Yisrael. This is not Adat Yisrael. It's Am Yisrael, Im, each one with the other. Maybe before I go further, I'll illustrate it. In a moment, you're going to hear a quote from the Rav that the crematorium, the ashes of the Hasidim and pious Jews were put together with the ashes of the radicals and the atheists. We must fight the enemy who does not differentiate between those who believe in God and those who reject Him. And this hits home 100%. You see, our enemies, they don't differentiate. Your Shemesh Shabbos, your Machalos Shabbos. You're makpid on kashrit, you're an ochel nevelet and treifot. Doesn't matter to our enemies one bit, one iota. We're all am, we're all in, we're all part of the same nation. They hate us. On this level, we are absolutely one people and must totally cooperate. And now I'll tell you something that the gift you have for coming to class today, very powerful, and this is not in the text, but a footnote. What did the Rav say here in the crematoriums? All the blood mixed together, from and non-from. So I want to tell you something. 1980, Shvat, Yud Shvat, so all of you know, it was the 1980, the 30th anniversary of the 7th Rebbe becoming Rebbe. It's not exactly true. It's actually 29 years. But basically, the 6th Rebbe died in 1950, And there was a machlokes among, I don't know, you know, I spent many months on this, but the chassidim made the youngest son-in-law the Rebbe. And so essentially he became Rebbe already in 1950, and they celebrated 30 years. The Rav went to that Fabrengen. It's been immortalized. I have a picture in my book, but Chabad has actually video with the Rav. And you have to understand, here is Moreinu V'Rabbeinu, the great-great-great-grandson of Reb Chaim Voloshin, the Talmud Mufak of the Vilna Gaon. And here is Reb Menachem Mendel Schneerson, the great-great-great-grandson of the Alter Rebbe. And you got to remember the Vilna Gaon left Vilna rather than be there when the Alter Rebbe came to see him. So you have to understand what we're talking about. And here the Rav and the Rebbe are sitting together, bekoved hadadi bifneyam ve'eda. And among the group that came with the Rav was a rabbi today in Jerusalem, a very chashuv, a Talmud Chacham. He's younger than I am. He's a Talmud from a later period. But you all know the name Rabbi Dr. Aaron Adler. And he's Rabbi Vol Nechama. And Aaron, who is one of the Rav's shamashim, he's married, by the way, a student of mine from the very first class I taught in Machon Gol, 1971. I had 31 students. And it was the first class of women I ever taught, and I taught women for 31 years afterwards. And she was one of the 31. And Aaron told me, he went over to the Rav afterwards. He was the Rav Shamas. They took him home, took him back to the dorm, and Aaron helped him. And he said to him, Rebbe, today you united the Chassidim and the Mitnagdim. Finally, Bifnei Am Ve'eda, you undid the machloket between the Vilna Gaon and the Alter Rebbe. And the Rav said to Aaron, Arala, he said, you're wrong. They were united already in the crematoriums. Very powerful conversation. And that's what the Rav answered him. Sorry, it's very emotional for me. So, on this level, I want to ask you, can we separate from the Reform? Can we separate from the conservative? Can we separate from the humanistic Jew? Can we separate from those leftist, fascist, I don't know what to call them, demonstrating under my window against the Prime Minister? Saturday night already, by 7:30, 8 o'clock, we heard drums and horns and bugles. They're marching up from Chernyakhovsky. They were marching up to Balfour, and it goes right under our window. We can hear them, wild, the noise, and, excuse me, the noise, the procession, the yelling, the shouting, the mantras, and can we separate from them? Absolutely not. Because we're one Am, Im, Ish Im Reyehu, one people. And you see, this is the rub. This is the heart of our problem. Where do we stand? It's very easy to be an agudist and say, Usher, 11 Rosh Yeshiva, verboten, forbidden. Very easy. Very easy to be a leftist, to be in Chovevei Torah. Och, don't ask Chovevei Torah. They had this graduation. They honored Reform woman rabbi to speak. Rabbeinu Shloim, what are you doing? Very easy for them. No, we're all the same. You have choice, pluralism. But if you're a Talmud of the Rav, here you see the dialectical tension. Adat Yisrael and Am Yisrael. And notice, when the Rav is interviewed, Sis Nisht Prast, like I said before, he already answers, this already is not just das Teira, it's a halacha. He's citing sources. And he goes further. The conclusion above is very simple. When we are faced with a problem for Jews and Jewish interests toward the world without, regarding the defense of Jewish rights in the non-Jewish world, then all groups and movements must be united in this area. There may not be any division, because any friction in the Jewish camp may be disastrous for the entire people. In this realm, we must consider the ideal of unity as a political, historical nation which includes everyone, from Mendes France. Who is Mendes? We're talking about the Prime Minister of France, right? Jewish origins. To the old-fashioned Jews of Mea Shearim, without any exception. In the crematoria, the ashes of the Hasidim, and what I quoted before, pious Jews, were put together with the ashes of the radicals and the atheists. So you see, on this level, absolute cooperation. Whoever we are, whatever we are, whatever lifestyle, but we're Jews. Hitler sought out, even if you were one quarter Jewish, one grandparents, you were condemned to become ashes and dust. And this is the contradiction. Then he goes further. With regard to our problem within, we're talking now Eidah, our spiritual religious interests, such as Jewish education, synagogues, councils of rabbis, whereby unity is expressed through spiritual ideological collectivism as a Torah community, it is my opinion that Orthodoxy cannot and should not unite with such groups which deny the fundamentals of our Weltanschauung. It is impossible for me to comprehend how Orthodox rabbis, who spent their best years in yeshiva and absorbed the spirit of the oral law and its traditions, for whom Rabbi Akiva, Maimonides, Rabbi Moshe Rissalis, the Gaon of Vilna, Rabbi Chaim Brisker, and other Jewish sages are the pillars upon which their spiritual world rests, can join with spiritual leaders for whom all this is worthless. A rabbinical organization is not a professional fraternity which fights for the economic interests of its rabbis. It is an ideological entity where members work for one purpose and one ideal. The fundamental difference in ideology and observance makes such a unity impossible. From the point of view of the Torah, we find the difference between Orthodox and Reform Judaism much greater than that which separated the Pharisees from the Sadducees in the days of the Second Commonwealth, and between the Karaites and traditionalists in the Gaonic era. Has Jewish history ever recorded an instance of a joint community council or a joint rabbinical council which considered of Karaites and Torah to Jews? In eternal problems, where the unity of Israel is based upon the concept of Eidah, it is halakhically more advisable and practically wiser not to unite with Reform or semi-Reform movements. Too much harmony and peace can cause confusion of the minds and will erase outwardly the boundaries between Orthodoxy and other movements. And I need not tell you, this is very powerful. Look what the Rav has said here. Board of Rabbis, what do we have in common? We surrender to Dvar Hashem, we surrender to Halacha. Look who our heroes are. Remember, the Rav once said in the Drasha that you go into the average school in the world, you'll ask the kids, who's Socrates, who's Plato? They'll look at you, who are you talking about? You go into a cheder and you'll ask the kids, who is Avram Avinu? Who is Yitzchak Avinu? Who is Yaakov Avinu? Who is Moshe Rabbeinu? Who is Aaron HaKohen? Who is Miri HaNeviah? And who are the Avot? Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Rachel, Rivka, Leah. The kids will respond. They'll know these people better than their own presidents and prime ministers who are alive and living in their generation. And this is the dialectical tension. Where do you draw the line? From the point of view of Ada, we have little in common with Jews who deny the authenticity of Torah Hashem. That's Ada. But from the point of view of Am Yisrael, we are part and parcel of the same people, brothers and sisters. We are all facing one destiny and one general commitment politically, to a certain degree culturally. We are Jews. Where do you differentiate? How do you draw the line? And this remains the ongoing challenge. Now, just give me one more second. In the state of Israel, we don't feel this challenge as great as in the diaspora. And I'll tell you why. And a lot of people have said this, a lot has been written about it. Here, when we speak about Am Yisrael, Ish Imreyehu, we're caught up with this almost on a daily basis. Yeah, we fight, we yell, we shout, we demonstrate pro, con, and then the rockets come in from Gaza, yeah, the Iranians up in Syria, and somehow we suddenly wake up to the fact that despite our differences, we have one destiny. I'll give credit to the Israeli army. I'll give credit to the Israeli army that it serves as a tremendous unifying force. Yes, Ben-Gurion viewed it as a force that would ultimately obscure religion and nuke religion and mute religion. And, you know, Ben-Gurion and his cohorts. But times have changed, times have moved on, and it's a tremendous unifying force. It opens your eyes to what Israel is all about. I know that my grandsons came back from the army, and many of them said to me, for the first time they saw non-religious Jews, but many of them had Jewish values. They were part of Am Yisrael. They cared. The army meant a great deal to them. And you could see the flow going back and forth. I remember when I did the basic training. So it was an older group, and a lot of them were doing, I was doing basic training as an Oled. I had come at an older age. I was 31 when I came in Aliyah. But many of them were doing the delayed basic training. For whatever the reasons were, they were in, they had to support a family, or they were in a yeshiva, etc. We were a lot of older people and a lot of rabbanim among us, and a great deal of religious soldiers. So we faced the question, Shabbos, how are we going to run it? We can't divide into 10 minyanim. Everyone have a different nusach. So I have to say, it was partially my idea. Every davening was a different nusach. It was so beautiful, and everyone was so happy. Yemenite, Moroccan, Ashkenaz, Sephardi. It was just beautiful because there was that expression of Klal Yisrael, of Am Yisrael. And I refer you to a very famous book by a dummy author called Washington, from Washington Avenue to Washington Street. And in that volume, the author tells you about what happened on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, 1976, I believe, or 75. Check it out. 1 second. 76. check it. And the drusha that he gave in the army, and that drusha says it all. I don't want to repeat it here. It's right there in the book. Okay, we've covered one point so far with the Rav, and it leaves us thinking, Am Yisrael and Adat Yisrael, and how do, where do we draw the line? How do we combine? And now you can understand why the Rav refused to sign the Cherem, and why the Rav's Talmidim struggled to this very day, Jerusalem Post, what's today's date? November 23rd, 2020, a big article by Rabbi Steve Rishkin and his point of view. Yes, Ellie, you wanted to ask.
Yeah, was the Rav's approach based on that last comment of not wanting to erase the boundary between Orthodox and Reform? Because, I mean, he has a whole explanation, but at the end he said the reason we don't want to get involved is because we don't want
to... No, because what do we have in common? I mean, you talk about rabbis meeting together, discussing a pasuk of Chumash, one believes it's divine and one believes it's man-made. We're in two different worlds.
Right, the thing, in a situation where there would be something to talk about, right, even reaching out to the Jews in America, stuff like that, inspiring, there's a lot of common ground,
even there you say there's common ground, but there's really no common ground, because what does it mean reaching out? Okay, so, but I'll tell you my point of view. I don't say I've solved the problem, and I don't think I can solve the problem. I think we have to live with this dialectical tension, the Hegelian dialectics, thesis, antithesis, how to achieve a synthesis, but I'll tell you. The Rav felt that on non-halachic issues, political anti-Semitism, Zionism, etc., we definitely should be united. And the synagogue council worked with the principle that each body, each member body, had veto power. That essentially meant the Orthodox did that. They want to issue a statement that Brit Mila is not necessary. Okay? So the Orthodox can veto it. You follow? So on that level, it's a lot easier to reach a Weltanschauung, to reach an operative way to live. The board of rabbis becomes much more difficult, because rabbis inevitably have to be involved in halachic matters. And there, where do you come together? Where do you have any unity? That is a very difficult problem. So it could be, if there's a board of rabbis, where they decide, look, on halachic issues, we're not going to issue any public statements. We recognize there's conflict, but we're here for general Jewish issues. Could be you have no problem with it. And Rabbi Rachman always added that because we sit together, and Rabbi Rubin can tell you stories from his rabbinate, because we sit together, you can insist on general kashrut. You follow? You can say, look, we can't eat in your house, but you can eat in my house. You don't want to do a public affair where the Orthodox people cannot eat. It's not right. That's not hospitable. It's not morally and ethically correct. So you see, it's fluid. It's flexible. Let me give you an example that troubles me until today. I'm actually writing about this in a similar context right now. I'm reaching it. I have a whole outline. I just have to fill in the flesh and blood. And the outline is like the sinews and the veins. I'll give you an example. Second only to the State of Israel. And the State of Israel, by the way, you have to understand that Ben-Gurion, from the point of view of Am Yisrael, was very solid. You remember what he said? Shmum. Do you know what I just said? Anyone know? Gentlemen, those listening, wave your hand if you understand what I just said. I'm quoting Ben-Gurion. Thanks, Yitzchak. All right, Baruch Hashem, I'm getting some. Shmum. Is Umat Muchadim. United Nations. Rashi Tevat in Hebrew. So the United Nations, even last week, voted that we're anti-Semites, we killed the Arabs, we kill ourselves, we killed the world. Soon there'll be a vote from the UN that we caused Corona to come to the world. You know, the built-in majority, it's beyond words. So Ben-Gurion understood, shmum, forget about it, idiots, eisfaps, trumpenics, who the hell are they? Let them go fly a kite. That's am levadad yishkom. And there, you understand, Ben-Gurion, with all his anti-religious feelings that there's a new Jew, a new world is born, but he understood what Am Yisrael is about. The state of Israel has come a long way, and maybe we're heading more into the Gula, Reshit HaGula. We're heading in already to a period. Who would dream the Arabs and what's happening? All right, let's see how it develops. Baruch Hashem. But that's our historic destiny. Shmum. Ben-Gurion, on that level, you get 100. On other levels, you get 0. I'm going to tell you a story. Second to the state of Israel, the greatest miracle, which again, you take for granted, Moshe, you already grew up when the marks were made, you understand? Russian Jewry woke up. Do you have any idea what we're talking about? Where do I come from? I'm a Russian Jew, like everyone else, a Soviet Jew, white Russia, Lithuania. Where do you come from? What are your roots?
My dad's grandparents.
Hungary. Hungary, you know? Gadisha. What are your roots?
Russian and German,
all right. But Russia plays a big role. Who the heck is Yomo sitting in the corner? The Ukraine. And Russian Jewry woke up. And it woke up, and there are many reasons why. It's miraculous. The Rav Reed Rakefitz, the Rav, where the Rav talks, he couldn't believe it. It's 3 generations, he says, no rabbis, no teachers, no yeshiva. He couldn't believe it. He knew communism, frightened stiff. When the Rav mentioned communism, he shivered, he shook. He saw what it did to Haslovich. So you got to give credit to the state of Israel, the hundreds of millions of dollars that were poured in. A guy like Malka and Aaron Rakefit, we went to Russia, we were paupers then. You have no idea what it was like in the 80s, the fallout of 73 and the war. And suddenly I have thousands and thousands of dollars in my pocket with instructions what to do with it in Russia. It's really taxpayers' money. So what we did, we woke up Russian Jewry. So now communism starts to shake. 86. Chernobyl. And tremendous demonstration. Sharansky is out. And they call for a demonstration in Washington. It was the biggest demonstration of Jews since Matan Torah. 250,000 Jews showed up in Washington. Who was missing? Agudat Yisrael. That was a tragedy. Because that demonstration was Am Yisrael in the full sense of the word, with a lot of overtones of Adat Yisrael, because by then there was this tremendous religious reawakening in the Refusnik community. So I inquired. Some of you know that I had very close, intimate, wonderful relations with Reb Moshe Scherer. And I found out what Aguda was opposed to was Orthodox Reformed conservative rabbis will be speaking. I said, join with everyone and ask them a condition which I think is logical. No rabbi speak, lay leaders. Once you have lay leaders speaking, it's not the same as rabbinic figures. All right, I didn't get very far with my suggestion, but we cannot totally cut ourselves off. We're Am Yisrael. And I have to tell you, it hurts so much because, again, you can't start to understand the life my wife and I lived from 1980 to 1990. Had a dual existence. I don't know how we did it, but we were young. Today we're old. We don't have that energy. We lived normal. No one knew. And we lived our entire life involved with Russia, sending shluchim, going ourselves, communism, dealing with the Mossad. Oh, it's unbelievable. Books have been written, not just Washington, but Netiv HaDamama, you'll meet the Rakefets there, a book published by the Mossad, by Merkaz, what's it called? Merkaz Shazar, I think, is the name of the publisher. Shazar, it's whatever they, in his memory. It's an important volume. It's not in English, it's only in Hebrew. So we felt so bad. But I have to say, Agudat Yisrael finally has matured a little. The American Aguda has grown up. And the results are unbelievable for the sake of Torah. Moshe, what am I talking about? Ellie, what am I talking about? What? That's Wednesday. Talking much bigger. The World Zionist Organization, the Jewish Agency. You just had a revolution. Aguda people never voted. You buy a shekel. What is it? $6, $7, $8. You buy a shekel, you get the right to vote. The Reform and Conservative took over the Jewish Agency. They're voting and they're shmoting. And they abolished the Torah Culture Department. They got rid of BMT, got rid of Machon Gold, etc., etc. The elections now, there was a revolution. For the first time, right-wing Orthodox parties got involved. And the leaders of Agudat Yisrael didn't say you can't vote. Until now, Chas v'Chalila to vote, it's the Zionist movement, we have nothing to do with Zionism, v'chulu, v'chulu. They grew up. They voted. No, you know what happened? Almost every appointment to the key positions are Shemrei Torah and Mitzvot. And the money involved, you're dealing with billions of dollars, you're dealing with Yehuda v'Shomron. Until now, the JNF was not allowed to put money in Yehuda v'Shomron because the Reform Movement wants to give everything away. It's a miracle they're willing to keep Yerushalayim. And even that I doubt. A miracle. They grew up. There should have been 500,000 people at that demonstration, not a 250,000. But thank God, 30, 40 years later, thank God, a little common Torah sense has been enhanced by the Jewish people, and we all see the positive results. Okay, so you see, the Rebbe's position is a dialectical tension. Adat Yisrael vis-a-vis Am Yisrael. If Synagogue Council, New York Board of Rabbis would only be involved with Am Yisrael, the Rav would certainly not object. Once they're also involved, and inevitably they will be involved with the other element, aid, Adat Yisrael, Goy Kodesh Mamlechet Kohanim, they're already, how can we join? What do we have in common? Karaites, Sadducees, Stukim were much frummer than the Reformer Conservative. The Karaites didn't allow a blech on Shabbos. Didn't allow, still don't, electricity on Shabbos. On that level, they agree with the Chazon Ish, all the Chumras, Jews, electricity, Shabbos. Reform? Did you ever see rabbis sit together with Karaite rabbis? With Stuki rabbis? Rav is very powerful. And this is why this machloket, I'll give you more sources, but this machloket went on, and Rabbi Hollander would swear that the Rav was opposed to synagogue council. Rabbi Louis Bernstein would swear the Rav was in favor of synagogue council. And the truth of the matter is they're both right and they're both wrong. And it's an ongoing open question. Okay. To reiterate, what did we do today? All right, today we dealt with, it's a very interesting question, first of all, whether it's a psak halacha, whether it's a das teira, what does das teira mean, what was Rav Moshe's point of view, very fascinating material. Mentioning Larry Kaplan and Rabbi Huttner, on those two names alone, you can lecture for 7 years, it'll be a Shemitah. That will lend you lectures. There's so much material written and published. And it's very honest questions. All right, Rav Huttner, I cannot tell you how much opposition came aboard with his writings. He's not the only one. Rabbi Elberg also with the Hishtadlut, Ritmani Shalalim. All right, yours truly has a lot to say and a lot to write on this topic. I have, you'll see my point of view when it's finished, when it's published. Am I right? Am I wrong? We can't be right, we can't be wrong, but we're just trying to be Torah-wise and intelligent. Let's put it that way. The Kavel, the Ribbono Shel Olam, will ultimately show us who is right and who is wrong. And I think we're getting a good lesson with Russian Jewry and all that happened and the Tshuva movement. And the state of Israel, and you make a cheshbon today, it's very shocking, but the majority of Jewish Chavrei Knesset today are Shomer Shabbos. It's shocking. Some of them, I don't think even know what Yiddishkeit is about, but at least they have the mamadic tradition. Their parents were Shomer Shabbos, they had Chinuch Mamlachti Dati, they had Chinuch Atzmai. Not always is the Chinuch proper. I suffer if someone with her head covered and she's a Chaverat Knesset and a result of Chinuch Mamlachti Dati and she says her dream is to see mixed seating at the Kotel, then we have failed in our Chinuch. But the Shomeret Shabbat she is, I have to be honest. I know people who know her well. Then we went into the Rav's point of view and what can I tell you? It's the most difficult point of view to follow because the challenge is constant. Where do we draw the line? Am Yisrael, Adat Yisrael, where do we draw the line? I told you what I think, what I feel, but I recognize it's an open issue. I can't believe that it's reached the stage of Israel, full force, reform and conservative. And take a look, it reached the stage of Israel dealing with Chutz Laaretz, all because Rabbi Melamed spoke with the reform lady rabbi from Paris. You follow? It didn't reach from within. Within, I don't know, could be there's much more that unites us. The saga of the Jews here, the army, the rockets, the UN, Shmum, etc. But it reached already Israel, not just Israel. We're talking Habracha, we're talking what's that in the Shomron, and Paris, head-on collision. My dear friends, where we left off here, we'll pick up exactly with the conservative movement and move a little further. A lot of fascinating material yet on Synagogue Council Board of Rabbis. The Sunday class, I never saw more discussion than when you take the Lulav and Etrog and the Kabbalah, and and I have to look at all that I was sent. I have to call a kavod, that's all I can say. And I have everything, Rabbi Grinstein, I have everything you sent me. You've got to look at it, be Ian. The trouble is I'm getting too many emails. So in the morning, I must have sat with Yomo and maybe 10 different emails between yesterday and today, maybe 15, if 20 emails went out. But next week, second to none, what the next question is, and the difference between a Kabbalistic Jew and a simple Litvisha mitnaged, I'll use the word rational, it never was expressed better than the simple question that came the way of Reb Menashe Klein. Are there any questions in the classroom? Okay, freebies if anyone wants. This is the Maimonides School. The information on what we spoke about before on Billy Millen. In relation to President Biden and his whole entire Jewish family, now more material starts to surface on, I think her name is Melissa Cohn. She's from South Africa. She's a graduate of the day school. Every Jewish kid in South Africa goes to day school. And she marries a guy, so we see where she's at. And her parents, Chazru B'Tshuvah, as I've told you, in South Africa, it's the highest percentage of Shmirat Shabbat of any place in the non-Israeli world. It may be higher than the general percentage in Israel as well. It's on to 50%, and 90% of the 50 are all Balei Tshuva. So now the question comes up with the Pinyan HaBen. Everyone is dealing with it. So I just want to quote to you from the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and this is all from the Shulchan Aruch. It was just easier for me to grab a volume of the Shonim Tzim B'Halacha. Kohanim v'Levi, I'm quoting Kuf Samach Dalet Sif Katan Tet. Kohanim v'Leviim Peturim Mipinyan HaBen, v'afilu Bat Koine Bat Levi Nisrael Yisrael HaBen Peturim Mipinyan. And we all know that if there's a grandfather, a Kohen, a Levi, there's no Pinyan HaBen. However, take a look, what we think is a Shander and a Chapan goes on only today. It's gone on for many generations. Yes, Bat Kohen Ibala Le'enu Yehudi. A Bat Kohen lives with a non-Jew and she becomes pregnant. Haben Chayav B'Pidyon. The child needs a Pidyon. Sha'arei Imon Et Chalala Min HaKahuna Al Yedei Bilat Ha'enu Yehudi. And you'll see, there are all sources here that go from Chatam Sofer, others, the Achronim, that a Bat Kohen who lives with a non-Jew becomes a Zonah, right? It's a Chaloshim Zonah. And if once there's a Chaloshim Zonah, just as a Kohen who marries a non-Jew, a Ger, someone who converted, I should say, not a non-Jew, or marries a Grusha, his children are halalim, her child is a halal. And if he's a halal, he has no status of descendant of kahuna, and he's chayav in pidyon haben. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Rabbanim paskin in relation to the grandchild. Here is a fabulous picture. It's only a shame that I can't show it to everybody. This is the Rav teaching 1954, and sitting next to his desk, the first one is Billy Millen. There's Billy Millen, there's Rabbi Foreman, this is Billy Millen. The third one in is Billy Millen. This is Benjamin Bleich, the famous Rabbi Bleich. This is Rabbi Foreman. This fellow, lives in Muncie, or lived in Muncie. He was in the stock market. I have his name in the office. I have to check it. Big Talmud Chacham. That's Irvin Shapiro here. Very fascinating picture. And that's the Rav, the young rabbi, or the seemingly young, why can I get this straight, the young Rabbi Soloveitchik. You can have copies, yeah. Anyone who wants a copy, I made copies. And finally, I want to say to a meeting and health and happiness, das Fadanya. Morty, turn it off, mute, whatever.
The recording has stopped.
Ay, Yashikaya. Are there any questions from the wide audience
okay.
around
people
the world?
People can unmute themselves. Rebbe?
Yeah.
Rebbe.
Go ahead.
Two things, well, three. You know that the Abgunten then issued a whole statement saying that it was lesser to participate, I mean, after the fact, at least, that it was that they didn't say specifically Zionist Congress, but they said this is Usser, the Gedolim have always said it's Usser, and you can't participate in such things at all. And at least they kept quiet while it was on, I suppose. But they didn't exactly back down after.
I didn't know that, but I hope...
Ron Feldman said that it's totally Usser vote, horrible, horrible. Him and Makil Cutler said that we're leaving the Aguda, because Rishul Kamenetsky said you can vote.
Right.
And they said, we'll leave the Aguda. But then Shlomo Kanetsky wrote to Reb Chaim Kanievsky a whole two-page letter saying that, okay, Reb Chaim said it's 100% mutter to vote.
So then
the Baruch Feldman said, okay, I'm mevat on my
das. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. I bite my lips when you talk about certain people, but go ahead. Yeah.
One of the things I was thinking of. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. Nachum, yeah.
Yeah, no, just one other thing. What you said about how they showed the tzitzit to the Georgian Jews,
right.
I remembered a while back there was a whole discussion on some blog about the cheret, you know, what it is, the history, whether you should wear it. And I think they had another discussion on what day you should say the Taint HaLamotar, you know, should you move it back to Israel. There was a whole discussion. So the guy who wrote it, he said he's a chavrusa of one of the guys on the conservative commission, you know, the Halakha commission. So he said to him, did these things ever come up? You know, did you ever discuss the conservatives? Should you wear the chelet? Should you say the Taint HaLamotar of Maburi? So the guy said to him, come on. He's like, it's not like conservative Jews are wearing tzitzit or saying the Taint HaLamotar anyway. You know? He's like, you have time to talk about gays, to talk about this or whatever. He's like, but that's what the people care about.
About that. The modern world. Anybody else?
Rav Gedalia Schwartz told me that when he was in Providence many, many years ago as a Rav, he was he belonged to the board of rabbis there. Then he heard that the Rav was opposed, so he stopped his participation. That goes many, many decades ago.
Right. So I think that in the original lecture when I mentioned what went on with Rabbi Agus, I think the Rav was opposed also to his participation. But that doesn't mean, again, like I said, there could be instances where you would have the rabbis only on non-Ada matters, Am matters, and the Rav wouldn't be opposed. It's not so simple, particularly in a smaller community where the dignity of the Jews is upheld by the few rabbis who were there, the Orthodox, Reform, Conservative. So it would have to be in a organization where it's clear they're not going to say anything about Kashrut or Shabbos or anything negative. But again, it's a dialectical tension, and each community has to make its own decision. Yes, Rabbi Grunstein.
Just a small note about leaving the shul to the sukkah next to the shul and then coming back in with lulav and esrog. I believe there could be a problem, according to the Shulchan Aruch, that you're leaving the shul before Kedusha the Sidra. The Paskins, you're not allowed to leave the shul before Kedusha the Sidra. And there's a whole pilpul. If you leave shul early, do you have to say Aleinu, even if you're planning to come back?
No, but I would say here, where it's obvious he's just going for the Dalad Minim, there shouldn't be a problem. Don't people leave shul for the sake of argument to bring in more Sidurim, let's say? What to get?
So I was once hosting at my table years ago the editor of the Koran Siddur, David Fuchs,
right,
and Eitan Holter, which I'm sure the Rebbe knows.
He's my Talmud.
He was the Rebbe student.
Yeah.
So Eitan Holter says this is what he does in the Yom Yisrael of Kew Garden Hills. He goes out to the sukkah and comes back in. And the editor of Koran threw that Shulchan Aruch at him. So apparently he thought at least that it was an issue.
Well, besides that, I wouldn't stand on that. But I do want, Rabbi Grunstein, I just want to tell you, I got an email from my nephew, who is the dentist, or who is the nephew of, who took in the Olah Hadashah. So I wrote back to him of our connection. Do you follow? So everything should be well with her. Any more questions? We got to clear the room.
Rabbi,
there's another class coming in.
Rabbi,
yeah.
Rabbi, I wrote to you also the exceptions the exception would be if I'm in Yerushalayim on Sukkot.
Yeah, you wrote on Sukkot.
Somebody on the phone should mute their self on the computer.
I got it.
Yeah, okay.
If I'm in Yerushalayim, not at ERTCOM. And they tried to daven at the Kotel, or at least in the old city, on Sukkot, and then I don't bench Esrog. I don't.
No, no, Mark, I understand. But what Mark.
Yeah, I wouldn't tell them because it's a Doraisa part.
No, it could be that in Yerushalayim, again, it could be, don't throw around, it's the Oraita, but it's a Chumrah, Rav Yashiv, etc. It could be that L'Katal L'Chem B'Yon R'Yishlechem L'Fnei Hashem Elokeichem, it could be that there's a special kiyum of taking Dalet Minim at the Har HaBayit. And therefore, if you live in Yerushalayim, and you can get to the Har HaBayit, so people don't make a bracha, they make a tonight that they don't want to be yotzei until they get to the Har HaBayit.
Right.
So I can tell, but I can tell
especially
you that
the first day is Shabbat. So if the first day is Shabbat, you're not waving it.
So anyway, Rabbi Yashin used to go to the Kotel, but he didn't make a bracha. He made a bracha in the morning, regular davening. Because it's very hard to say you're making it tonight, you're not yotzei, you lift the lulav and etrog, you're yotzei, mitzvah, then it's lichat kavanah on that level.
On that note, I once asked my Rebbe Rav Lichtenstein if that's a chumrah you should keep, shake again, and he said, vaday, if you can, why not?
Right.
Then I went to visit Rav Amital, and right away he said, zeh chidush al ha-bikulei yankiv, Rav Yaakov Eflinger, and he said, zeh bishpila tzabim shevi.
All right, Peseda. All right, gentlemen, including, I want to thank...
As far as the elections, the WZO elections,
yeah.
It was Rav Pesach Lerner who basically did the push and started his own party because he knew they would go with his rep.
Right. No, all the credit to Rav Pesach Lerner, 100%. He's Jonathan Pollard's rabbi. And if you want to know how low people can get in life, just look at the press over the weekend and today. Olmert came out against Pollard's coming to Israel. It's difficult. It's difficult to comprehend who this man is and how they give him publicity, a guy who sat in jail, and there's things that I know I don't want to talk about because they'll sue me. I'll have to bring witnesses from Borough Park. The stories are just unbelievable. And the chutzpah and the Jerusalem Post, I don't know how the Post survives, how Frum Jews don't boycott the Post, put out a new... There was Mordechai Dolinsky, Zichron Levracha, YU graduate, tried to fight the Post many decades ago in the 60s. It was then it was like the Palestinian Post. It was so anti-Zionist and anti-religious. And he went bankrupt. It's impossible to believe how they stay in business. They become so left, so anti. And to publish articles, they publish, and where else do I see it? In Yediot, Olmert, and to come out, what, the Pollard sat in jail 30 years. No, Mela, it was a mistake to make him a spy. Fine. On the other hand, it now turns out he helped Israel. Olmert admits it. But not to come to Israel? All right, we're not going to make a big party for him. I think Netanyahu has enough seichel to know we can't spit in America's face. He spied against America. Fine. But welcome him quietly, beautifully, Kotel, open arms, Ribono Shel Olam. What a price this man paid. And headlines today, I can't believe it. It's beyond comprehension. But believe me, as part of Am Yisrael, we got a lot of characters to put up with. It's not always so easy. I want to thank everyone for your wonderful participation until we meet again in health and happiness. Das v'danya.